Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're delving into the third edition of the UBS Wealth Management CIO's biannual Shifting Asia series, each instalment of which identifies and explores a trend that will shape the future of markets and sectors in the years ahead. The first report examined Asia's consumer dividend trend, and the second, the impact that artificial intelligence will have across the continent. This latest iteration is exploring one particular aspect of financial technology, or fintech, that has a particularly rich potential: emerging insurance technology, or insurtech. Our guest this week is the author of the Shifting Asia Insurtech report, Dennis Lam, who joined Monocle from his base in Hong Kong, where he works as equity strategist for the UBS Wealth Management CIO, to tell us more about tech disruption in the insurance industry. I began by asking Dennis to explain the background to this report and to provide an overview of the insurtech space.
This is part of our Shifting Asia series, where we look at major trends that could shape the future markets in a number of sectors in Asia over the next 5 to 10 years, meant to be thematic. But one of the ideas that came up was that insurance as an industry hasn't really changed the way that things are done for the better part of many years. I believe that talking to a lot of people, actually, their experience hasn't been 100% satisfactory. There's a lot of red tape. Essentially, it's a very time-consuming process once you have a claim, things like that. But also, a lot of new technologies are being developed that could change the way things are done in the industry. And as a result, we've seen a lot of development in the fintech space related to the insurance. That's for the insurance industry, but at the same time, you look at Asia. This is one of the most underpenetrated insurance markets in the world, because when you talk to most global insurers, a lot of them will say that Asia is a hugely attractive growth market because of the underpenetration. Essentially, if you think about the world population, around 43% of the world's entire population lives in the emerging Asia countries, but those areas only make up 13% of your total global world insurance premiums. That gives you a great deal of potential, but we've also come to realize that traditional distribution models, such as using agents, such as using bank branches through bank assurance, those are actually quite costly, inefficient distribution models in some of those countries because, first of all, some of these countries are huge, and we are talking about thousands of islands. It's hard to reach a very broad audience, and it will be extremely costly. Secondly, think about China, think about India, billions of people. Again, it's a very costly business for that sort of build-up and distribution. And that is why we combine the two. Actually, technology can truly accelerate this kind of penetration in the insurance space, of course, in the other businesses as well. But here, we see a very attractive opportunity and something that could truly disrupt the industry over the next 5 to 10 years. In a nutshell, that's where this report came from.
If we can maybe drill down in a bit more detail about exactly how that transformation that you've described is going to manifest itself. Presumably, there's all sorts of things at play here. There's artificial intelligence. We've got digital platforms, digital distribution channels, connectivity. Very broadly, you talk about these big and very disparate populations, but they're more connected now and they're getting increasingly connected. Are those just some of the ways in which the kind of fintech in the insurance space is going to transform the insurance industry all across Asia?
I certainly believe so, particularly that if you look at the disparity, in some of these countries' income levels are relatively low, but in terms of mobile phone penetration, smartphone penetration, it's actually not that low and certainly rising very rapidly. That gives you an opportunity, particularly for the insurers that have developed perhaps a mobile presence. I think that's the very cost-effective way to reach customers. Of course, in our report, we did talk about one of the biggest hurdles is education, But again, that is very, with the mobile channel, it is a very cost-effective channel to reach a mass audience through education, through why there's a need for insurance protection. I think that's just on the distribution side.
At the same time, how products are developed and priced, how risk is being assessed, we do have a number of tools, including connected devices that can measure, for example, in a car, how much you drive, of course, how safely this person is, and as a result, how likely this driver might get into an accident. I think that's a critical piece of information when it comes to pricing auto insurance. A number of insurers are also starting to use wearables on individuals, basically to track their activity levels and output levels and trying to incentivize their customers to maybe perhaps be a little healthier, because just the simple underlying principle that healthier customers tend to get sick perhaps on average a little bit, and that's a good risk versus somebody who lives a less healthier lifestyle, for instance. These certainly have an impact on how risks are being assessed and priced. It's just that the more data we get, the better we are at assessing the risk and pricing the risk and coming up with new products. And at the same time, on the demand side, we are seeing new demands for protection. For example, Uber. For example, the use of drones. Of course, the next step is how do you insure? How do you price that insurance? How do you, and who needs it? It's just that a lot of these sharing economies, a lot of these new products in the real world do demand a novel way of pricing and developing novel insurance solutions. And then I think one of the ways that the digital transformation is impacting the industries, not just the insurance industry, but any industry, is on the operations, on the administration, the processes side. I'll give you one example. There's this life insurance company in Japan that recently announced that it will replace more than 30 employees in the payment assessment department, and they're going to replace it with AI. On their estimate, they will save over $1 million U.S. per year. I think they are one of the pioneers of making such change. But if the cost saving is there, if your operation can be seamless with running with AI instead of real person, then I believe that more and more companies will go that route. And these are some of the few examples that will go on, I believe, in the next few years.
I know in the report you detail precisely the nature of those cost savings. And the numbers are big, aren't they? Many hundreds of billions for the whole of the Asian insurance industry. This is a real opportunity.
It certainly is, because if you think about perhaps you or your friends or family have had experience with insurance, with claims. I mean, the time it takes and the people involved, especially when it comes to claims, and particularly on the operational side that I just mentioned, on the administrative side, think about the cost savings you can achieve by replacing humans with technology and through automation and streamlining of processes. I think that in and of itself is already a huge savings. And one thing we did not mention just now is not just on the claim side, but on the fraud prevention. There are big numbers soaring around on how much it costs the industry on claims, on fraudulent claims. But with improved fraud detection, that actually saves a lot of money for the insurers in terms of the claim costs. And I think this is one of the areas that cannot be ignored, because when we have new predictive analytics, we have blockchain technologies, I think you can certainly draw the lines on how these new technologies can be applied to fraud prevention, and that actually saves a great deal of money on top of not just automation on the operational side, not just on the distribution side as well.
And Dennis, do those benefits and those cost savings across the board, do they make their way to the consumer, to the customer? Are they going to be the big winners? Because you can see how obviously insurance industry will be very happy to save money on this level. And again, there are concerns that growth in AI means fewer jobs, which again costs less money. But do customers, do you foresee, and does the report detail how customers will end up being the winners at the end?
think that is one of the contention that we've made in the report, is that the industry will become a great deal more competitive versus it is today. Because when you have the technology advantage, essentially in any business, if you can be a low-cost producer, then you can gain market share by underpricing your competitors. And I believe that's exactly what is going to happen with the industry going forward, perhaps not immediately, but going forward, when you have this kind of cost savings and you have this kind of more intense competition, essentially a lot of that cost savings will be passed on to the customers, perhaps not only in the form of lower premiums, but also in additional auxiliary services. For example, free wearables, for example, additional services for cars when somebody buy an auto insurance, things like that. I think that will become more and more prominent in the future.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll consider how incentivizing consumers could reshape people's behavior and even society for the better. And we'll ask, how are the insurance companies reacting to this fast-moving world? How much could incentivizing and using incentive-based products change consumer behavior for the better? I mean, I know in the report you get into this. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about how even small changes here, marginal changes, could affect quite a profound difference.
When you think about if more and more people become healthier because they're incentivized to do so, and one of the best ways is, you know, offer coupons and offer lower premiums. Essentially, you get one way is, to put it simply, you get paid to work out and become healthier, not necessarily in hard cash, but in other forms of incentives. I think this is a very attractive proposition because for most people, or for many people, you just need that little nudge. In Hong Kong, we're seeing several insurers that are already offering similar programs. If you hit certain steps each day or certain targets, essentially, you're offered perhaps a lower premium and even coupons for coffee.
So governments can gain and healthcare costs can reduce as a direct result of these marginal gains. Can you tell us more about how that works exactly?
If you have a healthier population, then first of all, it improves your overall productivity, just saying fewer sick days, right? Secondly, it's a matter of healthcare costs. Because oftentimes, actually, it eats into government budgets when, you know, might be borne by the government, and it takes away the funding that could be otherwise used for other public services, like building roads, building schools, things like that. But this is not only healthcare, but if you incentivize other people to be safer with, say, property, safer with how they drive, this goes into if you can incentivize people with lower premiums for auto insurance, lower premiums for example, property and then for fire, when you have essentially sensors on your cars and sensors in your house that can better prevent or essentially cut down accidents, then that is huge. If you think about, you know, just cutting, what do we see a reduction of 10% in car accidents? We see a 10% reduction in fire accidents. The cost of that, certainly we don't have an estimate. We don't have a number of how big that is. But again, we're talking about not just money, but also lives.
How are the insurers reacting to the kinds of themes and trends you've been telling us about and that are detailed in the report?
Actually, a lot of the insurers, even though many insurers tend to have the reputation of being a little bit slow, a lot of them are already noticing this trend and many of them are doing something about it. Meaning either investing in startups, investing in tech-related startups, or themselves having their own innovation labs, or themselves doing some sort of digital transformation or digital projects for the agents or for the operations. But it seems like not many insurers are completely ignoring it. And I think this is good. This will be good for the industry and certainly good for the customers, because at the end of the day, as we've argued in the report, is that they're the biggest winners when you have, you know, lower premiums, more personalized services, better customer engagement, and quicker claims, things like that. This actually is good for customers, and at the end, if more and more people are insured, it's better for the society as a whole. The one positive thing that jumped out is that when I started working on this project, I thought perhaps maybe the smaller, more nimble ones are more into this digital transformation, but the larger ones might be a little slower. But I was surprised that actually that is not true. In fact, I believe many large global insurers are certainly have a digital strategy in mind, and or something that they're working on. And certainly, in a way, I believe that what we've discussed in a report, it could actually materialize over the next 5 to 10 years.
And that's Dennis Lam out of Hong Kong, bringing us to the end of this 152nd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.